Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Man, you see what happened to KD the other night, KD?
I did.
Man, that's it's inspiring to see someone willing to put their body and their career on the line for a certain goal. But I think there might be limits. There might be limits.
You know, I don't know him enough about the situation to like definitely say like, oh, he put his career on the line for everybody. Blah blah blah. I don't know for sure that he didn't do it for selfish reasons. To be honest.
True. True.
I mean, I'm not saying he did, but I just like, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to cape up for somebody with so many possibilities.
That's true. It's just sad to see, of course, we're talking about Kevin Durant, game 5 of the NBA Finals. We don't talk about sports much on this podcast, but I thought it was a very interesting story to happen. KD's been out for a month with a calf strain. Came into the first 10 minutes of the game. He's getting buckets, man.
Yeah.
Man was getting
like,
buckets.
He had like 12 before he...
Had 12. Tried to do a post-up move. Just like, remember that time I did the post-up move? And then clack, clack. Boom.
Yeah. Actually, yes.
Clack, clack. That thing was done, boy. Hold up. Had to go sit down. So KD is out. It seems that he has a ruptured or torn Achilles.
Respect to him, by the way. Yeah, wish him the best. Praying for
him the best. The league about to be wide open next year. It's a terrible situation, but people were talking about before this finals. They were talking about the NBA was getting boring. It was getting a little droll, and then we turned it to this NBA finals, and Toronto was spanking that ass.
No, but I don't know, man. I think it's real circumstantial, dog. I'm not gonna lie. Like KD aside,
yeah,
and you know. Pardon me for maybe just being a prisoner of the recent past. But
right.
I'm not even like a Warriors fan, but I'm a fan of greatness. And
yep.
I kind of believe in what they're doing, man. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it ain't KD. I don't think KD's the reason that they're getting worked right now.
Okay.
I don't think the absence of KD. For me, it's really more of a Kevon Looney thing, actually.
Kevon Looney.
And I'm not even trying to be like the hot take guy.
Okay.
But straight up, like, think about it. How are they losing to Toronto? They're losing to Toronto primarily from inside presence because mm-hmm. Toronto is long and tall and mm-hmm. they can jump and they're getting a lot of layups.
Yeah.
And yeah. That has a lot to do with, yes, Kevin Durant impacts that because he is 7 foot tall and a pretty decent defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly what's been killing Golden State defensively is the ability for to the transition defense with the bigs mm-hmm. and that the bigs for Toronto are running the floor and there's nobody for Golden State to mm-hmm. to keep up with them on that. And then B is defending the pick and roll properly when they put the bigs up high. It's just like, you know, Boogie Cousins, God bless him, he's doing his best to come back.
Boy, a little tired.
But that boy,
that boy a little tired. Them legs look heavy.
If that reminded me, it's like that time we played with Mark Meadows.
Hey, man, and, look, dog. You don't got to bring that on my podcast, man.
And Bambus was running that pick and roll. And you,
it wasn't no roll, baby.
It wasn't no roll. It's the same thing happening with Boogie, man.
Oh,
I'm watching
snap.
Him. He can't defend that pick and roll at all.
Oh, snap. Oh, man.
And, you know, and so that's, you know, Looney ain't no superstar. But okay. what he is legitimate 6'10", 6'11", long, and mobile.
Yeah.
So it's just like, that makes a huge difference.
I agree. Oh, man, look, I do this every week. I'm sorry, y'all. Welcome to the Over the Shoulder podcast. This is your chance to eavesdrop on two professional creators as we discuss the sources, happenings, and inspirations from the creative industry, from film to production to music to culture. Join us this week, each week, as we push the envelope on the possibilities of the creative industry. Our host this week's for the discussion are, of course, your boy B-Mo Brown coming to you live.
Woo!
And then we also have my main man, 100 grand in the building, Mr. Michael Robinson. Welcome to the show, baby.
Yo. I'm sorry, John.
As always, we're coming to you live from the lobby of the Line Hotel on Full Service Radio. What's good?
Full Service Radio. Shout out to my
beautiful... My beautiful producer for today, Mr. Lexia. Hey, girl. Hey, what's poppin'?
Hey.
Hi, Lexia.
Hello.
Oh, wow. Welcome to the show, everybody. I got a good feeling. So, let's get straight into it. Today's word of the day. Hangdog. What? Hangdog, an adjective. H-A-N-G-D-O-G. Hangdog. Brown beaten, defeated, intimidated, abject. He always went around with a hangdog look. Similar to how I couldn't put the butter on that roll. I had a hangdog look on the court that day, baby. Oh, man.
Is that a colloquialism that has just made its way into the dictionary?
Well, actually, I read the etymology. It's actually a Southern term from the early 1920s. Okay. Combination of two words, because apparently you could be dogged and have your hang down, your head hanging low. Hangdog.
Got you.
I was about to say, I think I've heard my very Southern grandmother say this once or twice, and I just look at her like...
Oh, and she said it once or twice, which means she heard it like 1,000 times. It was like, that shit probably whack as hell.
That makes sense. I've never heard that word in my life.
Never heard hangdog?
And for it to be in the dictionary, I'm just like, okay, this is like a... Like bootylicious in the dictionary.
That's what I was just about to say that. Bootylicious in there.
It's that kind of vibe.
And so like, is conversate.
It would... Conversate is really in the dictionary.
Yeah, they folded, man. There used to be a time. Anyway, I'm sorry. We're not going to go there.
I didn't even know
that. Let's, you know what, Alexia? Let's get into a musical break. Let's listen to You and I by the man himself in the house from the Worldly Version. Make sure you check him out on all social media platforms. Micah D.E. Robinson.
Yeah.
Let's get to the song, and we'll talk about it later on in the show. All right? We'll be right back.
In my mind, we can conquer you and I.
Oh, man, that is a hit right there. Of course, that is a cover of the, well, comparable now, Stevie Wonder by the incredible Michael Robinson, who is in studio with us today. We're going to jump into an interview with him later on in the show. But if you don't mind right now, Mike, I'm going to get a little deep. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, man.
Cool. So as a content creator, I find it pivotal to constantly investigate that which inspires, confounds, and disrupts creativity. Each week, I explore one creative concept, deconstruct it to its creative atoms, and analyze the foundations in hopes of expanding the discovery of the creative process. This week, we got DJ Khaled on the chopping block. Now, there's something that doesn't sit right with my creative spirit when I think of and listen to DJ Khaled records. I'm just going to be honest about it. Mm-hmm. When I think of Khaled, I think about people who flip houses. You know, the folks who intentionally buy financially cheap homes, add a few renovations, present that as their creation, and then sell that house. Now, let me be clear. I am not disparaging the practice. It's quite genius as a financial ploy. But should that practice be used in the realm of creativity? I consider Khaled to be from the flipping mindset of progression. And I don't think I like it. Now, don't get me wrong. Khaled is successful, and this is not to be confused with hateration or holleration. I'll go as far as to say that his methods of promotion are borderline genius. Simple phrases. You the best. Who? We, nigga. And a baby. I mean, you know, you put those two things together, you really can't lose. However, I do not consider Khaled to be a creative or an artist. He exhibits creativity, and he recognizes artistry, but himself, not an artist. Like those who flip houses, I don't think Khaled has ever built anything from silence. I can't recall one DJ Khaled creation that was built with his hands only, especially lately. Khaled's songs are sad recreations of genius. Sometimes they smack and sometimes they fail. In the case of Wild Thoughts of Maria, couldn't lose. You know what I mean? But that same energy is currently bringing us SZA over Miss Jackson by Outkast, and it feels so cheap. I heard Khaled speak about the process of acquiring Maria Maria. He said he bought the song, paid Rihanna, hooked up Bryson Tiller to make a song. He was fishing for hit, and how could he lose? He had Rihanna, who's Rihanna. He had Bryson Tiller, who was the hottest R&B act at the time. And the genius of Santana backing, not only as a sample, it just felt like the song was over the Maria Maria song. And I don't think that's creativity. I don't call that authentic, and it ain't for me. So this week, I've been thinking this for a while, but this week Khaled finally showed his ass. He released this album at number 2 on the Billboard charts, Father of Assad, falling number 2 to Tyler, the Creator's Igor. There you go. Yeah, you know, I can't read. Anyway,
Igor. Which reached number 1, the first album, rap album to do it, where there were no production credits except for Tyler himself.
That's crazy. Because at number 2, you got DJ Khaled's Father of Assad, which is all the production credits. Yes. I mean, it takes 20 minutes to read who's featured on the damn album. Anyway, you're getting me upset now. now, here's how Khaled showed his ass, right? So in modern times, people don't buy albums like they used to. And that could be a whole nother too deep conversation, but just accept that as a fact. So artists have begun doing what they call a bundling strategy, where they take a piece of merchandise, they add a direct download, they sell the piece of merchandise, and it's also considered an album sale. In current Billboard climate, a physical album sale actually goes more towards your number than leads to your number one. More than a streaming album sale. So the more actual physical albums, i.e. bundles, t-shirts, hats, whatever piece of merchandise goes along with the digital download, as many of those as you sell, that's as many albums you sell. It's genius, right? But here's where the shark in the water, DJ Khaled, comes in. DJ Khaled decides to bundle his album with energy drinks. Now, I want somebody to tell me, this is rhetorical, I want somebody to tell me, when's the last time a music album was the same price as a soft drink? I can't think of it. When Cokes was 50 cents, I feel like albums was 99 cents. Right now, you can go onto iTunes, which is foolishly about to be deleted. That's another conversation. You could buy an album from $8.99 to $12.99. DJ Khaled valued his own album at less than $2.50. And I respect Billboard for upholding the standard of buying music. Not only was DJ Khaled trying to bundle with a very cheap product, he was also pushing that product in bulk to his own employees to pad his numbers. Again, I think that's whack as shit to be on top of that, to be honest. This type of energy he is displaying comes from his primary goal to create number ones and not create art. I do not believe that to be creativity. I do not believe that to be authentic. It's not me. And for once, and maybe this gives me a little more hope for the future of music. For once, the artist won. Igor, no production credits, just Tyler the Creative in his own studio doing his thing, making his music, versus the guy who tried to basically flip great songs to make temporary number ones. That's BMO Goes Too Deep. If you can't find it, swim for it. Michael Robinson, you got a response? I know you do. I know you do.
I mean, I pretty much, well, for one, I agree with most of the sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only place I would step back on it is to go all the way to say, like, I don't like it. I mean, it's, you know, I'm kind of neutral on it because honestly, I just look at it like, I can't say that I don't like that. I think I would have to say on a larger, broader scale that I don't like where we are right now as a culture.
Okay.
Because I can't blame Khaled for basically just rolling how we rolling right now.
Okay.
And the reality is art, we're in a place in society where pretty much in no area of our culture is art first. Second or third. The music business is more so a business than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And with that being the current climate, it's a brilliant business move. It is it's a move that completely sort of slaps the face of art. So I would agree that I definitely wouldn't call him an artist or anything like that. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like I can't be mad at him for just doing, you know, for at what they say, when you in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't be mad at him for, because reality is, man, if it wasn't him doing it, somebody else would be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now.
You're absolutely right. I think it goes to the tune of the systemic problem with the deletion of an iTunes, that we are more dependent upon streaming and music that is available very cheap and very fast rather than actually owning art. To your point, the owning of art used to be a big ass deal.
It used to be a big deal.
It used to be a big deal, and now it's just kind of like, I get to it. It's on my Spotify.
And granted, to some people it still is, but that essentially it's become a subset now.
Right.
It's become almost an underground thing to like actually like or appreciate art for art's sake.
Right.
And I mean, I guess that's the main reason why I say I can't be mad about it. It's funny because that this is your topic, because if I may partially go too deep myself.
Go ahead.
DC Music Census. Mayor Muriel Bowser put the thing out. She wants to gather data about, you know, essentially how to change the culture of the music scene here in DC, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
I think it's a lovely sentiment, but I did the survey, by the way. And in the last thing where she essentially just asked for open comments, what I essentially said in the comments was, I think that it's a lovely sentiment that you're doing, but it's a lot bigger than the direction that you're taking, because there isn't a culprit here. So it's kind of hard to like say, we're going to attack this, fix that, and do this other thing. The issue is large and from a long time ago. I think we as in general live as a society of 20 somethings and 30 somethings, whatever, who basically just don't have the appreciation for art and music that we used to as a society. It has nothing to do with anybody's like personal preferences or anybody being a bad person or a bad artist or none of that. Just in general, and we don't bang with like music and right. art as hard as we used to.
Okay.
You know, people want to go out every weekend and they want to go to bars and they want to go to the happy hour and blah, blah, blah. And they expect music to occur, mm-hmm. but they always want it to be in the background.
Right.
It's not something like they're not rolling up to Marvin's and Marvin says, hey, we have an artist that's going to pour their soul out tonight. So we're doing an additional $15 cover. If Marvin were to try that.
There'd be nobody in Marvin.
There would be nobody in Marvin. Everybody would turn away. Because right. ultimately, I'm not coming here for the music. I'm coming here for the bar. And I can minimally appreciate the music. And essentially, that level of value is not profitable.
Right.
So you got the artist complaining about not being paid enough for, mm-hmm. for our time, which I completely agree with. Obviously, I wish I made more money just doing that so I didn't have to do... Like I just started this week working for Lyman Bird, picking mm-hmm. up scooters because I have to do other stuff to make money.
Right.
You know, I wish that wasn't the case. But looking at it from the other side, then you also have the business owners who are like, well, we're already basically putting up $300 to $600 on a night where we're not really getting that back in terms of your impact on our profits to pay you to be here.
Right.
Because we think that it's a nice like icing on the cake for what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't afford within our profit margins,
right.
to pay you more than that.
Right. And so you think the census is not going to aid in that?
I don't, because I don't think you can't force the business owners to just all go in the red and pay artists more money than they have. And at the same time, the artists can't just stop
right.
doing music.
Right.
So there's no immediate win here, unless, of course, the government is literally about to just subsidize live music all over the city and literally just start giving some of these venues $1,000 a week to pay people more. But the real the real thing I'm saying is it's long term. It's we got to look at how did we get here?
Right.
I think we got here from generations of underexposure and that our appreciation for music is based largely on what we've been exposed to. You know, we both have parents who listen to the Emotions and, you know, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles or Led Zeppelin, you know. But
get the Zep out.
But is a real, real thing that there are, if you encounter like a 10-year-old right now,
right.
or even, not even 10, 16, I was subbing at Duke Ellington, which is a performing arts school, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the classes that I was working with, they didn't know what era Patti LaBelle sang in. They didn't know any of her songs.
Okay.
They knew that her name existed, but they knew nothing about her. They
right.
never heard her before. This is normal. You find a 10-year-old on the street, he's never heard of Marvin Gaye.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think with funding being taken out of schools and local like municipal programs, rec centers, et cetera, for music, whereas now that, you know, in some cases they don't have music classes at all.
Right.
And in a lot of cases when they do, the programs are piss poor because there's no funding going.
Right, right, right.
Over time, what that created is a generation of people who are underexposed and thusly don't care.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, you hold that thought. We're going to expose you right now, okay? Lex, you cue up the experimental. Cue up the song. We'll talk about it in a second. We'll be right back with more Over the Shoulder.
Sometimes I'm a happy sometimes. I'm blue. My disposition. Thank you.
trying to put you down.
So we just might be crazy. But come here. Are we crazy? No, oh, baby, don't leave. So we just might be crazy. But come here.
Oh man, dog, that's my favorite song. You already know that. We right back to Over the Shoulder. Your chance to eavesdrop on creatives. We have a very wonderful creative in the house today, Mr. Micah Robinson. What's up, man?
You.
For people, I don't know who would be watching us this closely, but this is probably like a ninth interview with each other, which is great.
It would only be the maybe second that actually made it to public consumption.
Yeah, true.
Because a lot of them were outtakes.
That's true. That's true. But let's get to the real stuff. For the people who don't know you, let's get a good brief intro. Who are you? What you do? Who your homies? And why?
Okay. My name is Micah Robinson. I am an artist. I'm a singer. I'm a piano player. I am born and raised in D.C., but have been blessed to travel and see probably about 50-60% of the world. That has greatly impacted who I am. I am a person who loves God, loves life, tries to see things objectively, and ultimately just wants to make a really large impact on the world before I get up out of here. Those are the things. I mean, there's lots of other stuff I can say to describe myself, but those are the things that matter to me the most.
Okay.
I think.
Cool. We got about 10 minutes. I'm going to hit you with some hard questions. All right, here we go.
Here we go.
So, as you know, I run around in the city with a bunch of creative circles. And actually, yesterday, I was in a curation meeting for the DC 100, which is kind of like the who's who, per se. Not popularity, but just a snapshot of the current music environment in DC. And so, a list of about 12 curators got together and put the list of like 300 artists together, right? And when I looked at the list, there were about 24 artists that I thought were just like automatics on the list that weren't even mentioned on the list. And your name was one of them. And so I had one of the questions in my head was, why isn't Michael Robinson, who is born, bred, world traveled, legend, in especially within the upcoming artist community, why isn't the larger DC community recognizing of your talents?
Man, there's a lot of theories on that one. We got 10 minutes.
I'll
spell them quickly.
Yeah.
One of them is potentially my fault, in the sense of, while I am from DC, I have never been a person who I'm just not real big on the like ownership of geography kind of thing.
Okay.
I'm more of like a world citizen, God made it all kind of guy.
Okay.
And so I think some of the artists who are more like DC, DC all day, like sometimes, you know,
right.
They it would make sense that they would get a little more attention directly within DC.
Right.
I also, because of my travels and my aspirations, haven't done as much of I haven't had as much activity as some other artists here in DC. Frankly, I don't consider myself to be a local artist. I just happen to live here.
Right.
And I love DC.
Right.
Like,
I
wouldn't want to live anywhere else, but I don't consider myself to be a local artist. And so there's a lot of things that I haven't done that some of the other more active local artists definitely have to earn that direct attention. I mean, I think if you're naming 100 people, I think I should still be mentioned. I feel like
I agree.
Klay Thompson right now.
Oh, wow. Like, you didn't make the
video. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I don't think there are, no matter what their path has been, I don't think there are 100 artists in D.C. that are doing more than what I'm doing.
And I 100% agree. So with that in mind, and also with the current conversation going on in D.C., you know, DC residents are really proud and really strong. There's DC Native Day and all that stuff. With the current climate, do you have intentions to leave DC, and why, if so?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I can honestly say, man, I've seen a lot of country. I've been a lot of places. I love DC as a city, as a man,
right,
and as like a place to live.
Right.
I think it's great. I have no desire to go anywhere.
Okay.
And I think technology and all of that has kind of made it so that you can be all over the place and not really, you know, have to necessarily leave home base. So nah, I ain't going nowhere. If I did, I'd leave the country, but I'm not going anywhere else.
So and I'll just be honest about it, does the infantile structure of the creative industry tend to push you away, or are you leaning more towards helping it become and build to what it could be?
No, it doesn't push me away. I guess it kind of speaks to the answer to the first question was, I don't function in it as much.
Right.
Like I said, I don't really consider myself a local artist. So when I look at what I'm doing and what I'm not doing, my successes and failures, I don't judge it based on just my activity in DC.
Right.
So for me, even though I agree with you that that the current climate, you know, could be better.
Right.
It doesn't really bother me because I'm not really, you know.
If it was better, would you lean more towards becoming a more local artist?
No.
If we were Atlanta?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Quite frankly, I think it's limiting.
Okay.
I mean, with all due respect to other people who,
right, you know,
who choose to do that, I am dead set on impacting this entire world.
Right.
And that's just where my focus is.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
But I love DC though, so please, I hope don't nobody take that.
No. I hope not. I hope nobody takes it that way.
Yeah.
So speaking of current conversations, I was having a conversation with an organization about creating a music competition, the Battle of the Bands of sorts. And in the midst of creating that idea, a philosophical question came up. On one side of the conversation were people who seriously opposed music as competition. They didn't think that art should ever be presented as one artist versus another artist for the attainment of success. On the other side, the philosophical debate was music is always, art is always competition, whether it's competition for finances or competition to attention. When you go on to Tidal and you have two songs in your head, is a competition. Which song you're going to listen to first, which song you're going to listen to second. So as an artist, I would very much like to know, what are your thoughts on music as a competition?
I'm closer to the side of the people who don't necessarily agree that music should be presented competitively.
Right.
But at the same time, I also think that music is the quiet cousin of the service industry.
Okay.
And so ultimately, it is still a function of entertainment, and we like to see competition as entertainment. So when that's presented, I think it's pretty much just individually, based on the individual decision of the artist of whether or not they want to subscribe to that. But I don't think that the competition existing at all is a bad thing. People want to be entertained, and that's one of the ways that they get entertained. Am I going to sign up for the competition? Probably not.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I'm like, yo, the competition can't happen. I'm not going to like go on strike and put up signs. No. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, competition implies that there's a single standard of success.
Right.
And that's just not true in music. The reality is there are trillions of ears in the world, or whatever the number past trillions is, because everybody has two.
Right.
So there's trillions of ears in the world. And, you know, just because one set of people doesn't like something doesn't mean that it's not still valuable to another set of people. So it's not like one way to be successful, or right, one line that you have to reach that determines whether or not you're successful.
Right. So. Okay. All right, cool. Cool. If you don't mind, let's take it back just a little bit. Can you talk to us about the two songs that we played today? We had You and I, we had Experimental, you know, your jam.
Acetaminophen.
There you go.
Try it for me.
Acetaminophen.
See?
There you go. I got it. Experimental acetaminophen. So can you talk to us about those two tracks?
Sure. The first one was You and I. It is a cover of a classic Stevie Wonder song. It's a song I've always loved. I think growing up in a house being black and listening to a lot of R&B.
Oh yeah.
I think You and I is kind of a cult classic for pretty much anybody that's black and 30 or older.
Mm.
From not only it being sung at a lot of people's weddings or whatever, but also from the episode of Good Times where Michael sang it, you know.
Yep, yep.
It's been a classic part of our culture,
right,
for a long time. So I've always loved the song. I think in particular, what drew me to recording this song in this moment was a lot of my personal songs they're about love, but they're not necessarily about like the celebratory kind of happy side of love. I mean, I've been in love before, whatever, but for whatever reason, the songs that I've written just haven't really been that. And so I wanted to record something that, you know, was like glad about being in love and express, you know, how I feel at the moment right now. I'm in love with somebody that I feel great about. And I wanted to record something that expressed that. So I went ahead and just, rather than coming up with my own words, I said, well, man, Stevie said it great. So
that's true.
We did You and I. And then Experimental on the contrast.
Exactly. The other side of the coin.
The other side of the coin. It's one of my songs. It's the title track of an EP that I put out at this point about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a song that I think is very reflective of me as a person and as an artist, in the fact that it is a lot of things simultaneously. If you played it slow with no drums and no production, it might sound like a jazz standard on the low. But at the same time, the chorus is a very like kind of rock, almost low key bounce beat kind of vibe. You know what I'm saying? So you got
the bounce.
Got a little go-go adjacent, little rock adjacent.
Okay.
You know, and then you still got the chords and things from my jazz degree. You know, and it's just, it's something that I like it because I feel like it's one of the one of the most comprehensive representations of who I am as an artist in terms of it's got a lot of elements, and to those who appreciate those things, I feel like they really dig it, you know?
Right. So. Cool. So before I let you go, two more things. Of course, we always believe sharing is caring here and over the show, the podcast. So tell the people how they can share and what they can care about.
At Micah D.E. Robinson on all social media platforms except Snapchat. So that would be Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Micah D.E. Robinson. That's MICHDEROBINSON. Also, Instagram gives you the kind privilege of allowing you to follow hashtags. So I have a hashtag you can follow as well. It's Who Is Micah Robinson. If you want to know, follow the hashtag and find out. Yeah, I would say between those things, you should be up on whatever it is I'm doing.
True. All right, so one more thing we'd like to ask, I guess, before they leave is to share with us the tools from the trade. Those tools can be as simple as a vape pen or your laptop or something as complicated as literary theory and rocket science. So what's a tool that you've been using over the last week and that you plan to use throughout the week to help you with your creative process?
Prayer. Yeah, I consult God before and about everything. Mm-hmm. Primarily just because I believe my purpose ultimately is for Him. And so I believe God is creator of everything. So it's who better to consult about anything in life than the person who created life? So, yeah.
Awesome. My tool for the trade this week, everybody, is the Riot Theory. If you haven't heard much about it, make sure you look it up. I posted a video about it actually on my Facebook if you want to check that out.
Huh? Is that a book?
No, it's the Riot Theory. Okay, so here's the Riot Theory, right? So when you think of a riot, you think of thousands of people charging the streets, breaking windows, burning down cars, slapping old folks, doing that kind of stuff, right? But when you think about... When you think about how a riot starts, the riot starts always with one person. It's also called, I think, like how to start a party theory. It starts with one person. It takes one person throwing a trash can through a glass window. But that one person is not followed by 999,000 people at one time. Then it takes the first supporter. So you have the first rioter and the first supporter. So there's two people. Then there's a third person. So then there's the 1,001 person. The 1,001 person was not ever and should never be the fourth person to join the riot. He was always going to be the 1,001 person. So your job as the person to start the riot is to accept the person who is the second or the first supporter, the second, third, fourth, so forth and so on, so that you can get to the 1,001. It takes one to start. And then it's like a rolling hill. So this week when I'm thinking about support and creating new projects, I'm thinking about how to find my first supporters, how to find my second supporters, and how we can start charging the street and breaking windows. This is BMO Brown, BMO Brown. Make sure you follow me on all social media platforms. Make sure you follow Over the Shoulder platforms at OTS.pod on Instagram and OTSpod on Twitter. We'll be back next week with another wonderful episode of Over the Shoulder Podcast. I'm pretty sure my partner Backpack Matt will be back in studio with us. Make sure you join us again live from the Line Hotel on Full Service Radio. Until next week, peace.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.